You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Ain't that the truth? And Wild Card Weekend needs to add a couple wild wilds to it. Like the wild, wild west, wild, wild, wild. Sometimes when I was tweeting and using hashtags, that's all I used was wild, wild. It was a lot of fun to see the games this weekend because the expectations, the outcomes, some of them unexpected. The games themselves, though, even if you thought you knew what the final outcome might be, the fact that none of the four games over Wild Card Weekend was decided by more than 8 points. Every single one of them came down to a single score, two of them going into overtime. Incredible displays of athleticism, individual feats of strength, jaw-dropping moments, some near misses, of course, and ultimately enough big plays for the winners. I'm still not over the Deshaun Watson spin move to get out of the grasp and control of a pair of defenders. To me, that was the most shocking moment of the weekend, not because he can't do it, because we know he can, but in that moment when he'd been under duress all game long, that was about to be the eighth sack of the game by the Buffalo Bills. And it led to the Texans rallying from 16 points down in the third quarter. But I'd love to hear from you. What shocked you the most about Wild, Wild Weekend? On Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Good Monday morning to you. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Home is so much more than a house. It's the home of your dreams. And for 30 years, they've been making it better. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. Really quick before I dive back into football, when I was driving into work, and you may have seen this on social media or on the internet some point this weekend, the world's oldest living person celebrated a birthday. She is a Japanese woman. She's 117 as of January 2nd. How about that? Oldest living person on the planet just turned 117. And she lives in a nursing home in southern Japan. And she had a big birthday party with family as well as other neighbors in the nursing home, members of the staff. She ate a lot of cake. She wanted more cake. So at 117, the woman's still functioning and eating cake. And she was asked, what are your secrets to longevity, to living this incredible life? At 117, she said, my three keys are family, sleep, and hope. And I thought that was kind of cool. It made me smile. In fact, in my car as I was listening, I said, yes, I need more sleep. But I'm all about the family and the hope. I thought that was really neat, and I wanted to share it with you on a Monday morning.
I'm tired. I want to go home.
Don't ruin it, LeBron James. As we start out 2020, family, sleep, and hope. Not avocado toast. Not some of the other crazy things that people come up with. Nope. Just the basics. Fill your life with a lot of love, a lot of people, even though family sometimes can drive us crazy. But people who love you no matter what. Throw in a little, well, not a little sleep, a lot of sleep. Make sure you take care of your physical body and your mind and you rest. And then hope, knowing that there's always a tomorrow. And for her, 117 years of them. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. The Philadelphia Eagles, one and done in the playoffs, doesn't take away from what they did in the final month of the season. Remember, they were 5-7. They were on life support. And they won the NFC East by running the table. And the big win, of course, was against the Dallas Cowboys in Week 16. But man alive, if they don't run into another situation with their quarterback, and this one's different, I absolutely despise the fact that there are people using Sunday to make their argument that Carson Wentz is injury prone. That's ridiculous. And also, don't let the truth get in the way of a good rant. Typical of the social media mob. But I was seeing a lot of that. In fact, I ripped some guy on Twitter who came at me with that. This was not a Carson Wentz is fragile, Carson Wentz is made of glass moment. This was a helmet-to-helmet hit by Jadeveon Clowney from behind, got his head at the right angle that he bounced off the turf. His head bounced off the turf. As much as it sucks for Carson Wentz, and it does, I was so disappointed for him and for the Eagles. This is part of what it means to be in the NFL, right? Nobody's going to feel sorry for you. Nobody's going to cry or take it easy on you because you lost your starting quarterback. But for Carson, a third straight year to not be on the field to finish up with his teammates, man, he's been hit with all kinds of adversity. And this by none of his own doing. And so out comes Josh McCown. Bet you didn't expect to see a third 40-something-year-old quarterback in the playoffs this weekend. And he did some good stuff. Had some good mobility, some sharp throws. He led multiple field goal drives, but therein was the biggest issue for the Philadelphia Eagles. They were 0-for-3 in the red zone. They just could not come up with the big offensive play when they desperately need it. Seattle, meanwhile, took a little while to get warmed up. But in addition to Russell Wilson leading this team in rushing, now, as much as we talk about Carson Wentz getting knocked out in the first quarter, Seattle has just gone through a month in which they've lost their top three running backs, multiple members of their offensive line. They've also been dealing with a ton of injuries on the offensive side of the ball, and they've asked other guys to step up when they had to have it. They also brought in a 33-year-old veteran who took a year off from football. He did the Carmelo Anthony method and returned just in time for a postseason run. And so it was not easy for the Seahawks to score in this game. They don't ever make it easy. They like to play games that go down to the wire. But the great separation in this game was the play of not just Russell Wilson, but his rookie wide receiver, DK Metcalf.
Moore now is wide to the right side with a slot left for Russell, who goes under center. Now Lockett goes in motion. Russell play fake. Now he's going to throw down the middle. Got a man. Metcalf makes the catch diving. He is in for a touchdown. Seahawks. What a play by the rookie DK Metcalf.
So DK Metcalf hauls in this 53-yard bomb from Russ. He falls down, but nobody gets to him. So he gets up and he tumbles into the end zone. And Seattle's able to tack on that touchdown on their first possession of the second half. The call was Steve Rabel on the Seahawks radio network. Philadelphia had a couple of big opportunities in the fourth quarter. In fact, both times Doug Peterson going for it on fourth down. I saw someone tweet this because there was it was the 2-minute warning, I think. There was a timeout. Fourth and the season for the Eagles as they were facing their last opportunity inside the 2-minute warning, Josh McCown, and they're in the red zone.
Shotgun snap, sets in the pocket, cocks his arm, pocket crumbles, he's brought down, sacked at the 12, hit on the play by Jaron Reed. Down he goes, and on downs, Seattle gets the ball.
Kevin Harlan on Westwood One. It was one of those moments where I couldn't help but think, man, what about if it had been Carson Wentz? And I know what ifs get you a whole lot here, right? But the idea that Wentz's athleticism and his ability to take off and to scramble might have been the difference on that fourth down, that definitely popped into my brain. But credit the Seahawks because they stuffed both fourth downs. Actually, one of them, they got lucky. A ball went right through the hands of Miles Sanders on their fourth down earlier in the fourth quarter. In this one, though, Jadeveon Clowney pulls down Josh McCown from behind. And it's, you know, a little easier to catch up with a 40-something-year-old quarterback than it is with a Carson Wentz. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Seahawks still had to get a fourth down. This was the exclamation. Did I say fourth down? They still had to get a first down. Fourth down's on my brain. They had to try to get enough time off the clock so they didn't give the ball back to the Eagles.
Play fake. Blitz is coming. Russ is going to let it fly. He's got Metcalf deep. Metcalf reaches up. He makes the catch near midfield. What a play call by the Seahawks. Just throw it deep. And Metcalf makes the catch. He has been spectacular today. And the Seahawks now can use up this last timeout of the Eagles and can run this clock down. The big first down, the huge completion, and we're getting the one-finger salute from the fans left in the stands.
Big, big plays by Russ. Russ was spectacular tonight in moving around and finding guys when we really need in crucial situations. But I think the night was stolen by DK. He just had a phenomenal night. Showed you know what he's capable of looking like. He's had a great season in his rookie year, but to have a night like that in the first chance ever in the playoffs, that was spectacular.
I give these scouting reports, you know, they're probably 10 to 15 pages sometimes, depending on the week. And everybody studies him, but, I mean, he knows everything from the protections to who the DBs are to the linebackers to what they did last time 4 years ago to this to that. I mean, I quiz him, you know, every time, every week, and he hammers him off. He knows him really well.
The rookie impressing a lot of people inside the locker room, and this was his coming out party. Of course, his playoff debut, and he sets a brand new NFL record, 160 yards, the most ever by a rookie receiver in the playoffs. Also the youngest Seattle player ever to score a postseason touchdown. He's 22, if I remember this correctly, 22 years and 22 days. It was kind of a fun number, but DK Metcalf not that long ago celebrating his 22nd birthday. It wasn't the same as Derrick Henry, who had a huge birthday party on Saturday night in New England, but still really impressive to see what DK Metcalf is all about. And he's still learning from Russell Wilson.
I mean, Russ is Russ, man. A game is never over. A play is never over. When he's back there, quarterback, I've seen him convert a third and like 13 running the ball. So, you know, he's a great competitor, a great leader out there. Bobby as well, the way they compete and just fight every play. It was just a great environment to just be playing in.
Not a whole lot of guys left over from the teams that went to the Super Bowl. Of course, Pete Carroll's still there. Russell Wilson. Bobby Wagner is who DK Metcalf was referring to. He made this open field tackle that in the second half that was beautiful. KJ Wright provides some big plays as well. And Jadeveon Clowney, who they traded for to start the season. As for the Eagles, Doug Peterson really disappointed for Carson Wentz after the game. And, of course, it forced them to adjust what they were doing offensively.
We eliminated some of the motions. We just kind of got back to some of the core plays, some of the things that Josh was comfortable with in the run game and the pass game. We did some good things. We just kind of stalled out in the red zone a little bit tonight and had opportunities, you know. But just got back to some of the core stuff with Josh.
The Seattle Seahawks are now 8-1 on the road, but similar to how they beat the Eagles in November, 17-9. In fact, isn't that odd? You want to talk about a nerd alert. The exact same score by which they beat the Eagles in Philadelphia not even 2 months ago. They love these close and late situations. Well, they're comfortable in them. They don't freak out. It's great leadership and poise that they have from their veterans and from their coaching staff. But my goodness, they never make it easy. You can say glass half full, glass half empty with the Seahawks. Yes, they win a lot of tight games. In fact, 2/3 of their games this season were decided by a score or less, a single
score.
Take
that for data.
Exactly. It's a lot of data to spit out, and it's all positive because they're still alive. But it also gives their fans agita, heart palpitations. And why is it that they are unable to slam the door on their opponents or to pull away? I asked that question of our Seahawks insider from NBC Sports Northwest. Joe Fan joined us in the first hour of the show following the game in Philadelphia. Love for you to check that out. We talked about Marshawn Lynch and his impact on the locker room and also the ways that DK Metcalf has grown into this receiving spot that he's been given, this number two receiver job behind Tyler Lockett. And then I asked him, what do you think of when I say Packers, Seahawks? Because that is the divisional round game. It's the last one for next weekend. No surprise that the NFL has moved it into prime time-ish. But that game will kick off at 5:40 Wisconsin time. Seahawks at Packers, the final game on Sunday. Before that, it's Texans at the Chiefs. And then on Saturday, you've got the number one seeds in action. The Niners hosting the Vikings, the Ravens under the lights against the Titans. And so we're set up for a divisional weekend with some stunning results. Three road teams emerge victorious from wild card weekend, and none of the games decided by more than 8 points, by more than a single score. What shocked you the most? You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Also take our Monday MVP poll. And if you're a Facebooker, we've got the same options for you there. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Madison, the tailback, play action for Kirk from under center, straight drop. Kirk trying to win it to Thielen, caught at the five, and he stopped at the two. Cousins, Thielen, 42 on the Saints. First and goal, Vikings from the two. One receiver left, three right. Cousins shotgun, Dalvin Cook to his left. Third and goal from the four. Kirk takes the snap, looks right, fade left, end zone, and it is caught. Touchdown!
It's a touchdown.
Amazing decision by Kirk Cousins. He saw the all-out blitz. He knew he had Rudolph one-on-one with the corner.
Rudy!
And just threw the jump ball.
Oh,
what a beautiful throw.
It's a football feeding frenzy. After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
On the Vikings Radio Network, Kirk Cousins' time to shine in overtime in the Superdome. Even if you are not shocked easily, this was pretty surprising. And oh, the ties between this year's overtime loss in the Superdome and last year's. Remember, it was a pass interference call that was missed against Nickell Robey-Coleman late in the fourth quarter. I know I'm reminding you of things that you could never forget. They go into overtime. Saints have the ball first. They don't score. Rams follow it up with the points they need. That's it. Over. Done. This year, it's not the Saints who end up with the ball first in overtime. They can't stop the Vikings from scoring. And there is a lot of scrutiny on that Kyle Rudolph touchdown pass. A lot of calls for offensive pass interference. The NFL declined to overturn it, declined to throw a flag. Al Riveron said after the fact, this is what we've done all year. We've essentially gone with the call in the field, which I hope means that after a year of probation, that rule will be stricken from the books. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. If you haven't heard the Vikings locker room celebration, I know Kirk Cousins played it down when he was at the podium, and he did talk about the team. It was a huge moment for him, of course, but he's had a lot of those this season. I know that he doesn't get a ton of credit for it because of situational. Some guy called me earlier and said, it's only because the game was in the daytime. Even though the game was indoors, it doesn't matter. It was before it got dark outside. That's the only reason that Kirk Cousins was able to deliver. Because, you know, he stinks at night. I just rolled my eyes again. It's a team game. And the team was all in. And I am not at all surprised, nor do I begrudge the Vikings and their offense the opportunity to expose the chip on their shoulder they've been carrying around. They've earned it, and they get a chance to gloat just a little bit. And their locker room celebration, starting with Mike Zimmer, awesome.
Now, one thing we got to remember, right? The last time we won a game in the playoffs at the last second, we didn't play very good the next week. So when we come back on Tuesday, we have to be ready to work, right? Number eight.
Team, right? Yes, hey, you held them to 20 points, man. Yes, you gave us a chance at the end, but I got three words for you. You like that? Yes! Yes!
Yes! And then the touchdown catch.
Hey, One, two, three.
I could listen to that locker room celebration over and over again. I am a sucker for the team stuff. It's my favorite part of sports. And that celebration was much deserved, richly earned, much deserved. Meanwhile, on the flip side, it's not the Minneapolis miracle, but I think it might have been just as miraculous. The Saints, playoff pain yet again. Is there another team who's felt more playoff pain the last 3 years? First, the Minneapolis miracle. That was at US Bank Stadium 2 seasons ago. And then back-to-back overtime losses in their own building. This was almost the Taysom Hill game. Almost. Could have been. The Saints' backup QB throwing a deep pass to set up a touchdown. And actually, they subbed out Drew Brees. He was watching from the sidelines. He catches a touchdown pass. He throws a lead block on another score. It was nearly the Taysom Hill game. Instead, it's another painful exit for Sean Payton and the Saints.
You tip your hats to Minnesota that they deserve to win. And it's always difficult when it happens in the playoffs. You know, there's no follow-up games. So you go from there.
You invest so much into it and have invested so much into it. You know, and so you understand that these opportunities are few. It's disappointing. If you're not the one holding up the trophy at the end of the year, it's disappointing.
Even if you don't think it's surprising that Minnesota won in the Superdome, it is surprising how inefficient and ineffective the Saints offense. At one point in the third quarter, they were 1 of 7 on third down, and they finished up 4 of 11. And yeah, there were a couple of late runs there where the Saints looked like they'd found a groove. That fourth quarter drive that resulted in the touchdown pass to Taysom Hill, of course, getting into field goal range. But Drew Brees also had a bad interception late in the first half, throwing downfield into double coverage. He was picked off by Anthony Harris. He had a fumble. Now, it didn't lead to any Minnesota points, but a fumble in the fourth quarter that certainly was a missed opportunity. It was not a great weekend for 40-something-year-old quarterbacks in the NFL, I'll tell you that. Meanwhile, Kirk Cousins getting this moment of redemption, and 3 of the 4 road teams survive. Kind of cool to think about the endless possibilities. All right, you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Who's your Monday MVP? You like that? I love that he pulled that out. And then also on our Facebook page, what shocked you the most about this weekend?
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Deshaun calling for the ball on 2nd and 6 at the Bills 44. Here's the snap. Here's a blitz. Watson in trouble. Watson escapes to the right side, and Watson throws it to Jones. Cutting inside 40, 35, 30, the 25, 20, 15, and down to the 10-yard line. What a play! The magician does it again. And he finds Tarwan Jones for a huge catch and run to get the Texans in field goal range. The snap is down. Fairbairn's kick is up. And it's good! And the Texans go to the divisional round in dramatic fashion, beating the Bills in overtime, 22-19. A sensational victory for the Texans.
Hits, misses, and messes. Time to talk football after hours with Amy Lawrence.
I'm not sure who had the best weekend, but I sure know that Deshaun Watson wowed me. I said this earlier, and it's so true. I cannot wait to watch the end of the Bills-Texans game again. And I don't just mean overtime. When Deshaun Watson, on their second possession, actually, they did not score. They had to punt away on their first possession after winning the coin flip. But the 2nd and 6 at the 44-yard line, Watson bouncing away from a defender, bouncing off one, spinning away from the grasp and control of two guys who are about to shut him down. could have been his eighth sack of the game. And a couple of them were his fault, holding on to the ball too long. But then he rolls out and he finds Jones downfield for 34 yards. The calls of that play, iconic from Wild Card Weekend, as well as the Fairbairn field goal, the chip shot to end the game. That was definitely a stunning start for a lot of reasons, not only because of Watson and the spin move after being under duress all game, but also because the Bills had a 16-point lead and squandered 425 total yards along with nearly 200 rushing yards. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Mark Vandermeer on the Texans Radio Network. J.J. Watt also returning in this game. And it was kind of fun to see him mic'd up. Forget kind of fun. It was amazing to see him mic'd up. He is such a powder keg of energy and excitement. And he had just the one official sack in this game, but it came on third down the second half when the Bills were threatening again. He is nuts, and I mean that as a huge compliment. People think I'm enthusiastic and full of energy. I got nothing compared to J.J. Watt. And he was full of nothing but praise for his quarterback after the game.
The atmosphere was electric. That's what you're, those are the moments you dream about. And so I appreciate our fans showing up and giving the energy. And it was a great feeling. But like I said, now we go back to work and we have another game to prepare for and bigger goals ahead.
All right, so your host totally messed up. He did praise Deshaun Watson after the game. If we can find that, I'll let you hear it. But yes, he was also all about the atmosphere. He really was feeding off the crowd. And it was great to see him back on the field as well. He had the torn pectoral muscle 2 months ago. And there was a report that he had asked the doctors, what are the chances that I make it back? And they told him this is, you know, typically a few months, 4 to 6 months to try to return from this kind of injury. And I think it was Lisa Salters who reported that he and his brother, TJ Watt, who were there at the game, were actually wrestling the night before. Of course they were, because that's what brothers do, right? They wrestle, even though it's the biggest game of J.J. Watt's career. And so, yeah, it was pretty neat to see him and to hear him. And he came up with that massive sack, and he just had one official tackle to go along with it. But he seemed to be everywhere making plays the entire game. And so the defense was stout. Once the Bills built that 16-0 lead, not allowing a whole lot after that, really forcing Josh Allen into some situations where he looked like a rookie again, where he made just inexplicable decisions, almost like he was freaking out. That one play where he gets downfield, he has a run, and then for whatever reason throws the ball up in the air backward like he's lateraling, and it's only his offensive lineman batting it out of bounds that keeps that from being a major turnover. So the defense was tough and physical between Whitney Mercilus and J.J. Watt, and then there was Deshaun Watson.
You're never out of a game when you have Deshaun Watson as your quarterback. The guy's incredible. We knew all we needed was a spark. I mean, we were down 16-0, and we didn't believe we were out of the game. All we needed was a spark. And you add Deshaun Watson to a spark, and you're going to have one hell of a fire.
I love that from J.J. Watt. Thank you guys for finding that bite for me. So Deshaun goes 20 of 25. Even though the Texans didn't score in the first half, he still finishes up 20 of 25. 247 yards, a passing TD, a rushing TD. He had 55 yards on the ground. And like I said, sacked 7 times, nearly an eighth. But in my opinion, the shocker of the weekend. Not because he can't do it, because he can. But because of the situation. And it looked like he was grasped and controlled and out of it. That play was going to be another loss, courtesy of the Bills defense. Phenomenal. I yelled in my living room. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. It wasn't a great performance for Ryan Tannehill. He led the NFL in passer rating this year. In fact, he had the fewest number of passing yards of any quarterback in the playoffs going back 10 years. But it was an incredible birthday for Derrick Henry. What a way to celebrate. And this is why I ask, who had the best weekend? Was it Kirk Cousins, who gets to answer back to all the critics? Was it Deshaun Watson, who pulls out this incredible play that will be on highlight reels for decades? Okay, decades. You know me, I'm melodramatic. Or was it Derrick Henry? on his 26th birthday, running for more yards than any running back has ever done against Bill Belichick in the playoffs, and adding a score to it in a game that was tight all the way through.
Give Henry at left guard, second effort, Henry, touchdown, Titans! And we've got a tie bowl game with the point pending.
Mike Heath on the Titans Radio Network. You know what that capped a drive in which he had all 75 yards? forget balancing the offense. You may know it's going to Derrick Henry, but it doesn't mean you can slow him down. Man, what a second half he's had. I wrote about it in my column last week, and people asked me, can Henry keep doing this against the Patriots defense? Well, he can. He did. But the Pats defense was also the stingiest in the NFL all season, giving up the fewest number of yards, not even 100 yards per game, collectively to their opponents. Forget 182 to one guy. And so it was amazing to see Derrick Henry do that and them not even need the passing offense, really. It's After Hours with A.B. Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio, 855-212-4227. That's our toll-free line brought to you by Geico. With a quick way you can save money, switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on your car insurance. Mike Vrabel, of course, being able to out-coach the master. And it was just the epitome of strategery, gamesmanship late, when he takes a series of penalties to run time off the clock, even though the Titans are getting ready to punt, which, you know, was kind of a gimme there. The field position they had, they could have tried for a long field goal. Instead, they take a series of flags so that they can run more time off the clock and keep the ball away from the Patriots. And so for Mike Vrabel, a former Patriots linebacker, he recognized he had to pull out all the stops, actually, to be able to get this one done in a place in which he is very familiar.
I think our players were just, they were ready to go. Our coaching staff did a great job to have them prepared. I told them to win the game, you're going to have to be mentally and physically exhausted, you know, to win this football game. Anytime you're in man coverage, they're going to try to pick and rub you. There's going to be, you know, gadgets or, you know, throwbacks or whatever there may be. Defensively, they're going to do things that are going to force you to think, and Ben and Ryan and make calls. We didn't hand him anything.
Definitely did not. And the Patriots defense kept it close. But the offense, nothing. I mean, forget the fact that they lost on their own field. They did lose three of their last four at home. The Patriots didn't score in the second half of this game on their own field in the postseason. And so for the first time in 10 years, the Patriots are not part of divisional weekend. They're not part of championship weekend. And we already know we'll have at least three new teams continuing what's been a very lively and competitive trend in the NFL postseason. 855-212-4227. Let's talk to Alex, who's in Ohio.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
You know, Nick Foles is 12-2 in his last 14 games as an Eagle, including four playoff wins. What that means is the Philadelphia Eagles are a significantly better team without Carson Wentz. So that tells you a couple things. Number one, Carson Wentz is terrible for chemistry. You look at this year, he was 5-7 at one point before major injury.
No, he wasn't 5-7. The team was 5-7.
Right. And that same team without him is 12-2. And it goes back to the locker room.
That same team without him doesn't make the playoffs this year.
But last year they were 5-6 with him, and they had a much tougher schedule to close out the season. They had to beat the Texans. The Rams made the Super Bowl. Nick Foles rallied that team against the Texans and the Rams, who, by the way, had they had to face Carson Wentz this year, Wentz doesn't come close to beating those teams. He barely beat a Giants.
How do you know?
He barely beat the Warriors.
That doesn't matter. You can't take one you can't take a result from one field and throw it onto another one, man. You can't do that. It wasn't just about Carson Wentz. They've had a ton of injuries. They lost their top receiver, their top running back. They lost a bunch of guys on their defense. And for them to even make the playoffs, he was playing his best football of the season. So I'm not sure your point, but you can't just automatically assume they would have lost here or would have lost there.
So how how does a 40-year-old washed-up Josh McCown have a 75% completion percentage with a 96 quarterback rating? Yesterday's game, with all those practice squads, with all the injuries, this 40-year-old washed-up quarterback outperformed Carson Wentz when Wentz lost to the Seahawks.
Wentz wasn't on the field. How could he have outperformed Carson Wentz?
Because Carson Wentz was horrible the first
time. Carson Wentz had a phenomenal final month.
But exactly. He had better stats last year and went 5-6. He had a 70% completion percentage.
You're comparing apples and oranges, man. You can't throw out the baby with the bathwater. Yeah, Josh McCown was out there yesterday, and yes, he did as well as he could. He's a very smart quarterback, but they were also 0-3 in the red zone. You can't tell me that in some of those situations, it didn't scream, wow, Carson Wentz's mobility and athleticism would be really helpful here. The Eagles are not in the playoffs without Carson Wentz because they had to run the table. He played his best football of the year in the final month. So you can't separate the two. And also, it's not his fault he wasn't out there. He got a concussion from a late hit from behind.
Team is 12-2 in their last 14 games without him, meaning the team is what carried him to the playoffs, not Carson Wentz. Doug Peterson has 4 playoff wins without Carson Wentz. So what that tells you is Carson Wentz had zero impact on the team because they played better without him. That's the reality.
No, they did not play better without him yesterday, man, and they wouldn't have played better without him in the final month of the season. Again, you're trying to compare things that are not comparable. Nick Foles was a special case. I mean, Nick Foles and the Eagles are a special combination. He wasn't able to play an entire season in Jacksonville. When he got his job back, he couldn't perform the same way. So sometimes it's about a coach, it's about a system, it's about a quarterback and everything coming together. The Eagles, they've decided to hitch their wagon to Carson Wentz, a star, and he rewarded them this season with a huge run down the stretch. And again, not his fault that he wasn't out there at the end of, well, at the after the first quarter. That had nothing to do with previous injuries, and it's too bad because this might have been a completely different outcome. But we don't know that because you can't just automatically assume. If the NFL teaches me anything week after week, it's that assuming makes an ass out of both you and me. You know, it fits perfectly. So who is your Monday MVP as we wrap up on this Monday morning? You can find our poll on Twitter, A-Law Radio. You can also find it on our Facebook page. It's a tight one. I'll give you that. Derrick Henry on his birthday. Kirk Cousins, you like that? I can listen to that locker room celebration over and over. Deshaun Watson with, to me, the play of the weekend. And then DK Metcalf, a rookie record in receiving yards. So there's also some angst. There's angst for New Orleans and for Philadelphia, who have exits yet again. There's angst for the Patriots. A lot of questions about Tom Brady and Bill Belichick and whether or not he's going to get more weapons if Brady returns. Of course, there are questions for the losers, but this is about the winners and focusing on them. We're back this Monday night. Thanks so much for joining us. After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. Boom!
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.